Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Now, we've got another round of cabinet bickering, but it's bickering about bickering, isn't it, Katie? We've heard from Jeremy Hunt.
Yes, so I've technically been away for a week and I've come back and I think we're still vaguely where we were with the customs union. This time, this morning, we have Jeremy Hunt basically thinly veiled message to Boris, which is that you shouldn't go and air your dirty laundry in public, and there is a thing called cabinet collective responsibility. I don't think that thing does exist anymore given
the past few months.
Yeah, exactly. But it obviously comes down to these two working groups on the customs union options, so the customs partnership and MaxVac. They're reporting back, the little two trio teams, what they found. But I think the thing is, he looked at the Sunday shows with Michael Gove on the Mars show, pointing out some of the problems with the customs partnership. You didn't get the feeling that he'd come up with a fantastic solution that's about to be revealed in a PowerPoint presentation. And likewise, you get the impression from people in the Treasury that they are still quite reluctant about MaxVac. So I don't know how far these are really going to take us.
James, last night, Damian Green, who is a close friend of Theresa May.
Not so close a friend that it saved him from being sacked by her.
Presumably still a close-ish friend, having been sacked from the cabinet a few months ago. He suggested that he thought that MaxVac might win the day. Do you think that's a sort of pitch-rolling attempt for Theresa May, or do you think it's just him speculating?
I think Katie is right that when you look at the makeup of these groups, I don't see much chance of Liam Fox or Michael Gove reversing their opposition to the new customs partnership, because their beefs with it are quite fundamental. Then on the MaxVac working group, the kind of two people who don't like it are Karen Bradley and Greg Clark. Now, Greg Clark is, according to members of the Brexit Inner Cabinet, Greg Clark is almost the most ideologically opposed to MaxVac. You know, he's kind of more passionately against it than Philip Hammond, even. But Greg Clark prides himself on being the kind of person who can find consensus. That, you know, but there is no situation where people of goodwill can't come to a common position. So I think he will be quite susceptible to those arguments. Then the whole question becomes about Karen Bradley, who I think you could argue is the most important member of the government at the moment. Because
it's an unusual thing.
Indeed. Because Theresa May's principal objection to MaxVac is Northern Ireland, and that she basically says she doesn't want a differential solution for Northern Ireland to the rest of the UK, and MaxVac can't work for Northern Ireland. If Karen Bradley, who is the biggest Theresa May loyalist in the cabinet, I'd say, if she turned around and said, actually, on closer inspection, I've decided that MaxVac, with a tweak or two, could work for Northern Ireland, then that would allow Theresa May to kind of climb down with dignity. So I think watch that question.
Katie, this is going to go on for much longer than we expected, isn't it? Are we going to get a decision this week? We've got a meeting of the Brexit War Cabinet again, more crunch talks.
I think even now it's looking at like a decision will be next week at the earliest, and even then there is obviously a pattern of behaviour here.
Well, we're troubling might, pattern of behaviour.
Yeah, maybe after we leave we'll come up with something that might work.
James, when does the government actually need to make a decision? Because at some point time is going to run out. You can't procrastinate forever with this, or can you?
It would be absurd, I think, to turn up to the June EU Council, or in the weeks leading up to it, as they begin to kind of, the officials and the Sherpas begin to hash out what's going to be decided at that council, without a UK view on the customs position. In part because until you know what customs arrangement you're going for, your argument about how you plan to solve the Northern Irish border and how that relates to the backstop is very hard to put down. And I think there is a danger that if you get to the June EU Council with no progress at all on the Irish border question, the EU says, all right, then we're just going to halt all talks until we sort this out on everything else, until we sorted the Irish border question. So I think that is the problem. I think there's another thing going on, which is just worth noting about these groups, which one person who's on the group said to me, which is, what message does it send out about the cabinet that Theresa May thinks that the Chancellor and the Foreign Secretary are too intellectually aggressive to play nicely with others, that they have to be kind of kept out of the groups? If the groups are going to be pragmatic and come to a decision, you have to lock two of the most senior members of the government out of the room. I do think that sends a rather odd message about the nature of the government, that she basically regards Boris Johnson and Philip Hammond as being incapable of playing nicely in the sandpit.
You do wonder whether Theresa May might want to lock Boris Johnson out of the room for more permanent amount of time. And moving on, Katie, the head of MI5 is giving quite an extraordinary speech later today. Tell us about that.
So this is a speech in Berlin, and it's splashed across several papers today, and there's lots of different top lines. One of the ones is the fact that he's expected to really go, you know, launch this attack on Russia, link it to the Salisbury poisoning, something the government has done, but MI5 has not done yet. And then there's also talk of this pitch now back to Brexit, because the security deal between the UK and Brussels is said to be in a slightly tenuous place at the moment. And this is going to be a plea, basically, that we need to work together to be safe against threats like Russia.
James, this is quite a significant intervention, isn't it? It's being billed as the strongest language that has been used about Russia so far.
Yeah, but I think the politics, one of the reasons why the UK government wants to talk about Russia is that with the exception possibly of a new Italian government, there is a fairly common European view about the threat that Russia poses. And by basically emphasising that and then emphasising cooperation, they are making clear what Britain brings to the table, and therefore arguing that this security relationship with the EU should be deeper than the EU has ever been prepared to go before. I think there is a tension here between the European Commission, which wants to take a very hard line on the UK as a third country after Brexit, and what role it can have in the member states. I think it is quite interesting that Emmanuel Macron, who is no softie on Brexit, but when he wants to set up this European intervention force, the idea that basically would intervene in Africa, North Africa and other places just on Europe's doorstep to try and deal with security threats, he wants to set that up outside of EU structures to make it easier for the UK to participate in it.
And finally, one topic that we just don't discuss enough on this podcast. We talk about Brexit far too much, but we never talk about David Miliband. And fortunately, the Prince Across the Water has given us a little bit of wisdom this weekend. Katie, do share that with us.
Yeah, so we don't talk about David Miliband much, but anyone who sits in the centrist New Party camp, I think, brings them up about 3 times a day. Now they have something to work with. After Rachel Sylvester told us about a month ago that he was still attracted to Britain, friends said, it turns out that attraction is strong enough that he's teamed up with a few other sitting MPs, obviously he is not one of those, to try and stop a hard Brexit. And he's been on the Today programme this morning. I think he suggested that Labour will be the midwife to Brexit, if really nice image, if they don't stand up, you know, sharper. And also, again, this idea of Britain should stay in the single market, which people are saying is now back on the table because you've had the Lords' Rebellion on that. So there's an amendment which will come back to the House. At the moment, I do think this seems to be a very small level of enthusiasm, probably the same people who would have liked to see David Miliband 3 months ago, 6 months ago. I'm not getting the sense of David Miliband fever as I walk the streets.
Yes, James, it may be that David Miliband is still attracted to Britain, but does Britain fancy him back?
The thing I'd say about David Miliband is, I mean, the argument made by Ed Miliband's supporters in the 2010 Labour leadership election that Ed Miliband was the better politician who spoke in a more human way than his brother and was more empathetic is all true. I mean, you know,
are we coming from a low base here?
You look at that David Miliband, how David Miliband lost that leadership contest. I remember asking one MP at the time who hadn't supported him, who I would have thought was a natural to support him, new MP, definitely on that wing of the party. And they said they couldn't bring themselves to support him because as he talked to them, he was constantly looking over their shoulders to see if there was anything more interesting behind them. And even if in that moment when you're courting an absolutely crucial vote from somebody, you can't make them feel special for 35 seconds before you move on to the next person. I mean, that is a telling flaw. I also think that the idea that someone who has gone off to work for a charity, I have no issue with people being paid good money for doing jobs, but I think there is something slightly morally dubious or ethically dubious about going off to work for a charity that helps refugees, which emphasises how very small sums of money can make a massive difference to refugees, and being paid around $500,000 a year, and also having another job with a hedge fund. I'm not sure that's the right look. And I think the problem for David Miliband is, I suspect a lot of voters look at him, and without even kind of realising it, he is almost the embodiment of the political class that they were choosing to reject in voting for Brexit.
Well, I think it's fair to say that James is just not that into David Miliband. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. You can listen to this on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. And you've got a special offer if you're a podcast listener. 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12 and a free limited edition Moleskine notebook. Just go to spectator.co.uk/pod offer.